Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This is September. There's no good song for August, really. August doesn't rhyme with anything. Earth, Wind, and Fire would do a song called Schmogust. I'm trying to think of anything. Does anything rhyme with August?
Let's see.
August. Foggiest.
Foggiest, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's not going to work.
Doggest?
Doggiest.
Doggest, as in dog days. Yeah.
There you go.
Still feels like a stretch. That's why we do this. Six ten in the morning, the Steve Cochran Show, and show number 704 at Cochran Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, 312-981-7200. You can call, you can text, you can drop by the window and fog it up. Apparently over the weekend, a lot of Lollapalooza people who were highly inebriated came by and slobbered all over the window.
Yeah, it looks like they were licking the windows.
Yeah, which I have to say is not healthy.
Ugh.
Yeah, because you don't know where this window's been. You know what I'm saying? Speaking of health issues, as the Olympics approach, I mentioned we're going to talk to Teddy Greenstein and other folks who are actually at the games in Rio. It's not just the water. If you're going to the Olympics, Dave, are you going to the Olympics?
I don't think I'm going to get there.
By Rio, Dave. Drop in. There is more than just the water to be concerned with in Rio, according to the World Health Organization. So if you're getting up this morning and you're starting to pack for Rio, make a note of a couple of things. Digestive issues, of course, are a part of it. But you can also get hepatitis A. Hepatitis A is a possibility from either swimming in the water. There will be helicopters flying over the beaches to see if there's any floating garbage.
Well, you were saying yesterday, and it's like raw sewage there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is. It's not like it is raw sewage. There are actual pieces of things.
Okay. I don't know why you're so fascinated with this part of the topic. I don't need graphic. I want you to go to your room. Oh, you're in your room.
I'm in my room, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But doesn't that cut down on the sharks?
I'm just saying if you're swimming.
I know what you're saying. If for some reason you feel like we need a technical explanation of it, we can all picture it.
Yeah, all right.
Sunburn is a major problem as well, obviously. Flu is an issue as well, mostly because you're around so many other people. Sexually transmitted diseases are a problem as well. How many condoms did we say to the athletes were granted? 42?
Something like that.
Where did they come up with 42? How do you do the math on 42? How many days?
There's 14.
21 days of the Olympics?
Well, it's 2 weeks, basically. So
that means you're doing it three times a day?
Shouldn't they be practicing their sport instead?
Well,
or is this...
maybe it's an average.
You know, there is a question about whether or not you should engage in sexual behavior before an event because it could tire you out, or there is another school of thought that could fire you up. Personally, it makes me tired. There's dengue fever. You can get a little dengue fever from mosquitoes, if you like. These are all on the smorgasbord of things that could happen in Rio. Parasites, a big problem in Rio. Parasites and fleas. As well, but that's at the nicer hotels. Crime is an issue as well, but you have to get at least two blocks away from your hotel before you're victimized by that. And, of course, some people will bring germs in. So, again, Rio, fun city. The Olympics start Friday night.
You didn't even mention terrorism.
And this all qualifies as the agony of defeat?
It will be. How's the American team supposed to do?
Well, very well.
They're actually wearing spacesuits, NASA spacesuits.
Or what, for which event?
All of them.
Oh.
Yeah, I think the U.S. should do very well.
Yeah, now that many of the Russians are out.
That'll help.
Mm-hmm. We got rid of the cheaters.
Some of them.
Some.
Some of the cheaters will still be in. Who other than the USA, Dave? Let's go live to Dave in Rio. Who other than the USA is expected to perform well at the Olympics? What other country?
I don't think any.
Which team?
None.
What about China? How are they?
China, I think their gymnastics, I believe, are pretty good.
Yeah.
But these are more specific sports specialties. We're expected to perform across the board.
I think so.
And diving. They're always very good in diving.
Yeah, I think U.S. is the favorite to lead the medal count when it's all done.
We got this great swimming team, too. I don't know if you've heard of this kid, Michael Spitz.
I think Phelps. You're thinking Phelps.
Is that Mark's little brother, Michael?
It's Mark's son. Yeah, Mark's Pitt's son. You know, Kevin Cordes is on the swim team. He's from Naperville.
Yep.
Kid grew up behind me.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. I know his parents.
Oh, we were talking about that.
Yeah, his parents are great and wonderful people. Been training in Singapore or something in the last year. I didn't know Singapore was a hotbed for swim training, but he's specializing in two events. Good kid. Of course, I haven't talked to him in 10 years.
Connor Dwyer.
10 years ago, he was fabulous.
He's a kid. Oh, sorry. Connor Dwyer is a kid from Winnetka.
Yeah.
He's also going to be there.
So we got a couple Chicago entries.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Burrow has been.
Ryan Burrow's in the Olympics?
No, but he's been profiling all of the local athletes who will be there.
Ryan Burrow's in the News Ferret division. He's trying to get in there and get after something. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's a little Olympics preview. Carefully scripted as
always. I didn't know it was coming.
Yeah. Standby Kid of the Week coming up. Nick DiGilio coming up. Nick was never a Kid of the Week, but he'll be on to talk about some show business stuff. And then after 7 o'clock, amongst other things, we'll tell you more about this U.S. airstrikes over Libya. You know, speaking of Dave, I don't know if you know this, but you and I are old. And Shawna, you are too.
Yeah, I guess so.
But another kid that grew up with my son, with Ross, who used to work on the show. You remember Ross? He was here for a while.
Vaguely.
This kid, Kevin, I can't say his last name for security purposes, is either about to or is already flying the highest of high-tech jets for the Navy. And in a time like this where, you know, you got airstrikes in Libya and, you know, trouble all over the world, it's pretty nerve-wracking because you're hoping the kid's going to be on a sim. You know, you want the kid to be safe. He wanted to fly jets. He's an elite, smart kid who has worked his very hard to get to this point, and now at 25 or 26, whatever he is now, he's going to be flying the best equipment we have. But I just hope he stays safe.
Yeah, absolutely. God bless him.
Sure.
Yeah. Although I have to tell you, when you said Ross and then you said Kevin, you scared me because I thought Kevin Powell.
That's what I was thinking.
Me too.
If Kevin Powell was defending America, we would have some issues, don't you think?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I'm tired. Can someone else take the jet up?
Could you stop at Taco Bell on the waves?
What to see, what's out at the show. I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GN's Cochrane Show. And what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night. DiGilio, he knows what shows are good, what's stinking.
We should have DeCoste do an August song.
Who's in the know?
He rhymed DiGilio. Nick joins us now. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Morning.
Nick and I just had the Good Morning Guy point in the parking lot of WGN. It's how men greet each other from a distance. You just point at each other in a cool fashion.
That's right. And nobody's cooler than you, Steve.
Yeah, the both of us. Yeah, the both of us. We really set the bar, don't we?
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I saw something a couple of nights ago on TV. I don't remember. It was one of these, you know, the networks are running out game shows now because they're cheap to produce.
Right.
And CBS has a bunch of them on Sunday night. I don't know which one it was. But the question was, at what point do attractive people, and you could apply this to cool people, stop being hotter or, in this case, cooler? And the consensus in the survey was 50. So I've only been not cool for like 5 years. So that's pretty good for me.
Yeah. I'm only 1 year in
to
being uncool. So
yeah, so you're only on the other side for a little while. You could still see when you were cool.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go over a couple of things here. What's Don't Think Twice?
Don't Think Twice is the movie that I mentioned on Thursday before we went. This is the Mike Birbiglia movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the film that he wrote and directed. It stars Keenan Michael Key, Gillian Jacobs, Kate Micucci, and it is about a group of improv artists who work in New York, in a small theater, do late night improv, don't make a lot of money, and one of them gets chosen to do the show. And the show, in this case, in the movie, it's called Weekend Live, but obviously it's meant to be Saturday Night Live. Keenan Michael Key plays the guy who gets the gig. And once he gets the gig, it affects what happens between the rest of the group, the improv group, who is struggling and living in really crappy apartments and still doing improv for 15 to 20 people a weekend, but are passionate about it. I got to say, Steve, this might be my favorite movie of the year. so far.
They got it right. They got the whole show business feel right when somebody gets a gig and you want to wish them well, but it hurts a little, that whole vibe?
Steve, it's so right, it's terrifying. I know every single person in this movie. I am at least two of them. and the truths that are in this movie are there. It's also really, really funny, really, really wonderfully acted. It goes from being really funny to really painful, especially if you've been in any kind of situation like that. You know, having done storefront theater for over 20 years in Chicago and all of the comedy and having done improv for years, this is as truthful a portrayal of that world, as accurate a portrayal of that world as I've ever seen. And it's also a movie that will work even if you haven't had any kind of experience in the world of improv or the world of entertainment, just because the characters are so well written and so well acted that you care about them from the first frame of the movie. It is it's everything that you know you could want from just a movie about human beings interacting.
But it's got to be. I haven't really thought about this because I know how petty show business can be. But it's got to be the same in other businesses, doesn't it? I mean, if you're like a if you get out of law school and you know whoever you were in law school with, maybe it's your best friend, gets a gig at a firm, you know, you wish them well, but you're a little bitter, maybe? I don't know. But does it not work the same way in other businesses? I think the reason it's so stark in show business is because it's so hard to make money in show business. So when somebody gets a gig, and there's also that combination of passion for it, and somebody gets a gig and you don't, it's perfectly human to be happy for them and really hate them at the same time.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. And I think that's universal of any business or any profession. I think it's absolutely universal. I think that's one of the reasons why Second City and Kelly Leonard does podcasts now on GN Plus, talks about how they go into businesses and apply improv games and Second City skills to run a regular business. So it's applicable in any world. I mean, those kind of feelings are applicable in any world. And everybody has those feelings. Now, the one inaccuracy in the movie, and there's only one, and the rest of it is absolutely true, absolutely, completely, 100% true. But the only inaccuracy, and Steve, I know you'll agree with me on this, is that the first week that Key and Michael Key's character is on the Saturday Night Live replacement in the movie, the first week that he's on, he gets to do his main character.
Yeah, of course not.
No, you're going to get two lines. You're going to get two lines at most. So that's the only thing that's inaccurate is that he got to do like his big main.
You go to the back of the line.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing that didn't ring true. Otherwise, Birbiglia got it right. You know, and it's so weird because I know you've been in the business for a long time, Steve. And there's every person that you've ever met. My favorite is Birbiglia himself is in it. And he plays the guy who also teaches improv and is like the guru who brought a lot of people in. He's been doing it the longest. So, of course, he's the most upset that somebody younger than him and who doesn't teach gets the gig.
Right.
But he's the guy who's pushing 40, who lives with two roommates, sleeps in what looks like a dorm room, and continually seduces the 22-year-old girls that he teaches in class. And I don't know how many times I've met that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, until that guy becomes so sad that even the girls who are really desperate won't give him the time of day.
That's right.
All right,
I love the fact that Birbiglia played that part. I think that says a lot.
Yeah.
About the guy who wrote and directed it plays that part.
Yeah, he may have spent a few weekends that way before he got married. speaking of weekends, flashback weekend coming up next weekend?
It's coming up this weekend.
Oh, it's this weekend.
Yeah, it's this weekend, and a whole bunch of great stuff for horror fans. The one thing that I do want to mention are two screenings of a film called Phantasm, which is actually one of the greatest horror films ever made. And they're screening it Friday night at 10 o'clock and this Saturday night at 11:30 at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. And the director and writer, Don Coscarelli, is going to be there. Phantasm is a legendary horror movie, but the great thing is this is remastered from the original 1979 print. It's digitally remastered. And you know who's responsible for getting this done? J.J. Abrams.
Oh, really?
Yeah, J.J. Abrams, one of his favorite movies of all time, is Phantasm. So he funded this. It's a brand-new restoration print. It doesn't come out in theaters until the end of September, and we're going to screen it at the Flashback Convention at the Movie Co. Theater this weekend, Friday night and Saturday night. And J.J. Abrams loves Phantasm so much that he named a character in the big Star Wars movie that he just did, Captain Phasma, after Phantasm.
I wonder what J.J. Abrams was like as a kid. He was probably kind of fun to hang around with, I would guess.
He probably was, and he was probably a big dork, and I'd love that. So that's the flashback weekend is coming up as well.
Bad News Bears. Now, you got to explain this to me. This is Monday the 8th at the Music Box. What's the significance of bringing it back?
It's the 40th anniversary. It's the 40th anniversary of the Bad News Bears, and Dan Epstein, who has written two baseball books, was just on my show this morning, is a good friend of the show, and he's a very successful author. He just moved back to Chicago, and he and I are co-hosting this, and he's going to do a book signing of his book called Stars and Strikes, which is all about the baseball season of 1976. And then we're going to do a big Q&A afterwards. It's the 40th anniversary, a 35-millimeter print at the Music Box, one of the best youth movies ever made, one of the best baseball movies ever made. And we're going to have a great time with that. That's Monday night. That starts at 7 at the Music Box.
76, is that the year the Big Red Machine swept the Yankees?
That's exactly the same year. It's also the year that Rick Monday rescued the flag from being burned. Yeah.
And next Tuesday at the Movie Co., it's another Nick movie night. Please bring your own armor for RoboCop.
The original RoboCop, yeah.
At the Movie Co. on the big screen. That'll be cool.
Yeah, $10 to get in. Parking is free for that. It's a crazy week. My weekend is nuts. From Thursday night, I check into the hotel for the flashback weekend. I do the whole flashback weekend doing Q&As and hosting things. And then Monday, I've got Bad News Bears. Tuesday, I've got RoboCop, which is why I'm taking next week off at the station.
Horror, children's classic, RoboCop. Is it any wonder Nick has turned out this way?
Yes, and Steve, if you get a chance, get out and see Don't Think Twice.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
It's a great film.
Yeah, I think it'll probably make me uncomfortable in spots. 6:29, that's Nick. He's back tonight before his crazy weekend. He's around all week, as a matter of fact. Tip your waiters and waitresses, as we like to say. We'll come back. We'll do the big story. Dave Schwann's in for Andre. He's back tomorrow on 7:20 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Kid of the Week, we do it every week, and you're invited to submit a Kid of the Week entry, like, for instance, the little girl we're about to meet. The submitter, Dave. Yes, that's a word. I didn't just make it up. The submitter. You know, the kid would be the submittee. The submitter.
Yes.
Can you believe I was an English major? Because I can't. The submitter is a woman that worked for her father, or works with her father. So, you know, so I'm saying that these Kid of the Week entries, they can come from anywhere.
You never know. Somebody you know.
So you know a kid that goes above and beyond for them, for themselves, for their family, for the community, whatever. Could be little news, could be big news. Let us know, Kid of the Week. You go to WGNradio.com/contest. Submit an entry for a kid between 5 and 18. Winner gets chosen. And then in December, we're going to have Mary Vandeveld and Dave Ennett locked in a room. And they will be going over all the...
Don't have to lock us in. Really, we're not going to escape.
Well, you could try to get out. We're going to lock in a room with a chimney. And then with the candy cane-colored smoke comes out of the chimney, we'll know that you've chosen a Kid of the Year. So,
whatever.
The 2016 Kid of the Year will be awarded a $5,000 prize courtesy of Ray Chevy and Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy and Antioch. See all the inventory at rayandraymonddeals.com. Go to WGNradio.com/contest to submit your entry. Now, what's better than seeing a little kid read? Little kids love to read, right?
They do.
Oh, you go from, especially in the summer. They have the reading clubs and everything.
Yeah, and they, you know, schools have these reading competitions for the little kids.
The libraries have those programs.
Then at some point, they grow up and they quit reading. Well, they don't quit completely. It's not like they forget how. But they just don't have the same passion for it. So I love that period of time when kids are in that I can't read enough books phase, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the story.
And just the way they sound when they're reading.
Oh,
whatever
it
may be.
Yeah, they just throw.
Yeah.
And they don't pay attention to you. And why would you want them to? They're reading. But that brings us to our friend Maya, my new pal. Good morning, Maya.
Hi.
How are you today?
Good.
And how old are you?
I'm 7.
7 years old. You got a job?
No.
You're still living off your parents, huh?
Yeah,
that's okay, Maya. What grade are you in?
I'm going to be going into second.
Going into second grade. You excited?
Yeah.
What have you been doing this summer for fun?
I have been going to the pool and riding our quads.
Are you a good swimmer?
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to watching swimming in the Olympics?
Yeah.
Are you a fast swimmer?
Kind of.
Yeah. And what's the other thing you do? You ride quads. What's a quad?
It's like this four-wheeler.
Oh, look at you, big shot. Yeah. How many of those do you have?
What?
How many of those do you guys have? How many of the quads? How many quads do you have? Do you have a bunch of them?
We have two.
Can I come over?
We have two.
Can I come over and ride with you?
Maybe.
All right. Well, check with the authorities.
That was noncommittal.
Stranger danger.
Maya, let's talk about you for a second here. In Hawthorne Woods, you wanted to put up a little free library in the Acorn Acres subdivision, Sandman Park, and you've been talking about this since you were four?
Yes.
Well, what made you think of it at four? That was years ago.
Yeah.
You just like when kids read, or what was your inspiration?
Because when I saw it on TV for the first time, I realized that I really wanted to do it.
Okay. And why does it make you happy when other kids read?
Because that way they can learn.
Okay. Well, that all seems to make sense to me. Now, last October, when you were six, you had to go to a village board meeting. Do you know what a village board meeting was before you went to that?
No.
It's a bunch of grown-ups yapping. A bunch of grown-ups sitting around talking, and you had to convince them that your idea was a good idea, right?
Yeah.
How did that go?
It went well.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happened?
So I had to speak to the mayor and the board, and at first I was really shy and scared.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first started talking, it started to get a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said yes, and I was really happy.
That should be the way all politics goes.
Yes.
All politics should be settled that way. You know, maybe you're a little nervous, but you go up, you're a little shy at first, but then you state your case, and it goes the way you want, and you're really happy. That's a pretty good lesson. Do you think you'd ever want to be president someday?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I'd elect you this year.
Yeah, right now.
So here's the deal. This little free library gets put up, and Maya's parents, Ryan and Nicole, pay for it. It's installed on a post overlooking a scenic pond, and the box is loaded with books for kids. Some of them are your old books, right, Maya?
Yes.
Which ones did you donate? Did you have a favorite one that you donated?
Yes.
What was it?
Charlotte's Web.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. You remember how Charlotte's Web ends? Car chase. Yeah. Now, the only request is if somebody takes a book, they need to leave one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got a great system, kid. I'm very impressed with you. And I know you're... Your family's very proud of you as well. You're absolutely a great kid of the week. Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes.
How many?
I just have one brother and one sister.
Older, younger? How old are they?
My brother is six and my little baby sister is three.
Mm-hmm. Does your brother bug you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thought so. We'll keep an eye on him for you. And what do you want to be when you grow up?
I would probably want to be either a person who works at the bakery or a president.
I think both of those are good. If we had a president who was really good at baking stuff, that's your secret to
happy
America.
A lot of votes.
I would have thought author. Right, I would have thought Maya would want to be an author.
An author, a teacher, a writer.
A librarian.
Guys, yeah. She's baking and running the country. She doesn't have time to write books right now.
Good point.
I'm sorry, Maya. These people don't understand you the way I do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So here's what. I have a pair of tickets to the Go Ape Treetop Adventure. Suspended obstacles, Tarzan swings, breathtaking zip lines at Bemis Woods and the Cook County Forest Preserve near Western Springs. Your whole family can have fun there. That sounds like a good time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right. That's at goape.com. It's a great website. Also, you like pizza?
Yeah.
All right. I got Lou Malnati's pizza for you. Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. And I'm also going to give you Dave Ennett's car. Do you need a car, Maya?
Yeah.
Oh, okay then.
She has an ATV. She doesn't need one.
We're going to have to get her a booster seat to drive it, though. Maya, it's really a pleasure to meet you. You're a very impressive young lady, and I'm very pleased that you agreed to be on the show. Happy Tuesday, and you're the kid of the week.
Thanks.
All right, you have a great day, Maya. Hold on, okay? It's my new pal, Maya. She's seven.
Cutest thing.
Very cute.
I want a library card to that library.
I want to see Maya talking to the town council.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a library for kids.
How could you say
What's not easy to understand about that?
Now I got to go bake and run the country.
I like that. That's a good combo.
It is a good
President
combo.
Baker.
Multitasking.
That's a solid
combo. Just go exchange.
Just go ape.
Exchange at the bakery?
You know, well, the library. Exchange.
Take a pastry, leave a pastry.
You could do that, but, you know, take a book, leave a book.
Yeah, it's a really cool
Fantastic.
Idea.
Fantastic.
And again, the parents, you got to give the parents credit, right? Because your kid comes to you with an idea, and you're tired, it's a long day at work.
Yep.
You know, you could very easily make a mistake there and go, oh, Maya, not now. But Maya's got an idea, and you support Maya's idea, and you get out there, and you put up the library, and you drive her. Well, I assume you drive her. She may have taken the four-wheeler over to the town council meeting.
And I would hope the board made a unanimous decision to support her.
If they didn't, we're going to find out who didn't. Hildy Kozile, K-O-Z-I-O-L, thanks for submitting Maya's name. She's tremendous. Really good kid.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
All right, Dave, name that tune. Ready? Go. 20, got it?
I can sing it, but I can't come up with a name.
Were you ever a disc jockey, Shwani?
Yes, I was.
And you probably played this.
DJ.
Jay Ferguson, Thunder
Jay
Island.
Jay Ferguson, Thunder Island.
You've won nothing. At 6:53.
That's usually the story of my life.
Last night was the All of America. Our long national nightmare is over. All of America can rest easy this morning knowing the Bachelorette has made her choice. Was it Aaron Rodgers' brother?
It was.
Yes.
What, that was like a rhetorical question. I'm setting up the clip. All right. Well, let's move on to another item then.
What? Well, you asked.
You did ask the question. Just
were we not supposed to give it away?
Was it? Here's what I was going to say. Was it Aaron Rodgers' brother or was it the other dude whose name I
Robbie.
Can't remember? Why don't we listen and find out? I don't know that we need to listen now, do we?
No, I don't know what happened. I was watching the Cubs.
It was agonizing. I watched it.
By the way, that show, and I understand it's a huge hit, but that show, because I tried to watch 10 minutes of it last night.
It's addictive.
I wanted to throw a brick through my TV.
Well, you can't just start watching it at the last segment. You have watch the whole thing.
There is no scenario.
My husband did the same
thing,
by the way.
Let me tell you something. There's no. How many guys in the beginning of The Bachelorette?
There were like 25 to 30 this
All right.
time.
I can't speak for women on this issue. I'll bring Sandra again to correct me. But I can tell you right now, there is no scenario on the planet where 25 or 30 guys are going to sit around fighting over one woman. They're just not.
What do you mean? They did. Like the last
Because it's
years.
A TV show.
Well, believe me, these guys were a little bit weird about the whole thing. I mean, it was like a big frat, you know.
Because it's a TV show.
And they all loved JoJo.
No, I want the floozy. No, I want the floozy.
I think she made out with every single one. Maybe she missed a couple in
Well, that's
this one.
How you try out and see which one you're going to fall in love with.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Please, God, if you're listening, have Pat Boyle not be listening this morning.
The worst is if they were a bad kisser. You got to eliminate.
Yeah, that is true. Or if they have bad breath or something.
I certainly hope your fiance is sleeping.
Yes.
All right, so have we ever seen numbers breakdowns on this show? It's got to be 90% women that watch this show.
You'd be surprised. There's a lot of men that watch it
I think
well,
that
with
Pat
husbands.
Would like me to watch it so that way he'd be forced into watching it. Forced, in air quotes, because I think he likes the drama of it.
Oh, I can't take it. I can't take it. You know, juxtaposed against the rest of the world and JoJo's concerned about who she's really going to love. And has anybody ever stayed married?
Yeah.
Ryan and Trista.
Yeah, Ryan and Trista have a couple kids.
Okay, they've got like 45 seasons of this thing.
No,
and they got one wedding that lasted?
No, I think there's been about three, I think, Mayor, haven't there?
I don't know. Yeah. Last night was the best episode I ever watched.
Of The Bachelorette. Huh? And The Bachelor started this, right? Well, yeah. Why? And by the way, in what scenario would 30 women fight over one dude?
Oh, that's probably every day, so... That's normal life.
Well, apparently I'm wrong.
And these guys were fighting at some point. There was a guy in there, a bad boy, Chad, And he was just picking fights with everyone, and he ate meat the entire time.
He said that he had a bad year, though, and that we should give him another try.
Oh, God.
What do you mean he ate meat the entire time?
He always was eating meat. Like, if there was a food tray or a sandwich tray, he was just devouring the roast beef off, just...
Well, maybe he
eating
knew,
meat the whole
maybe,
time.
Maybe he knew catering was about to end for him, and he had to go back to his regular life.
Yes, free drink and food the whole time.
By the way, do any of these people work?
Well, that's what's funny. When you watch it, they always have who they are and underneath what their occupation is, and they're always a former this. Like, Jordan was a former quarterback, and Robbie was a former swimmer.
So none of them have jobs.
What do they do? Because they have to take off, 3 months to do the show. So most of them have to quit their jobs. Who gives somebody 3 months off?
Yeah, can you imagine going into the mechanics, the chief mechanics office, and you go, listen, I'm going to need 3 months off to do The Bachelorette? Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. I think we should have Mike Jacobson apply.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
That would be great.
I'm not sure if you want that.
Yeah. Well, we'd have to give him a sabbatical 3 months.
No, no. I'm not concerned about Mike's future. I'm concerned about great material for the show.
Yeah, exactly.
So that could be excellent. Mike, are you up for being on The Bachelorette?
Absolutely not.
If we call ABC, we can get this done.
It's research.
Wait, do you want Mike to be The Bachelor? Where all the girls are competing for him, or you want him to just compete?
Because I have 30 women competing for me on a daily basis, as it is. So it's like real life.
Are you doing that thing again where you add up all the women you've ever met in your life?
Yes, and then subtracting 12.
All right, we'll get Mike on The Bachelorette. All right, so we have no idea who won last night,
no.
So why don't we play the super surprising clip? Roll it.
Every day I've been wanting it to be you. With you, but for some reason my heart is somewhere else. Robbie, I didn't want this.
You look amazing. Oh. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, Jordan, I love you so much. I've been waiting to tell you that I love you.
I love you. Joelle Hannah Fletcher. Will you marry me?
Yes. Oh my God, I love
you. Give me that hand. Give me that hand. Oh, I'm shaking. Let me see if I can get it on.
So did they have room for the orchestra on the cliff? Where did the proposal take place?
Thailand.
Yeah, but where were they? Were they like on a cliff with the ocean behind them?
Yes, pretty much.
It was funny in the...
Was it anywhere near Phuket? Because it seems like that would be appropriate.
In the after the rose ceremony, they gave them a trip to congratulate themselves to some resort in like Philly, but Philly just doesn't sound amazing. Even
wait,
if it's
Philly?
They're like...
Philadelphia? So I missed
wait, they're leaving Thailand for Philadelphia?
Right, they're like, and as a congratulations, you get to go back to blah, blah, blah in Philly. And she's like, oh, I love that.
Didn't
like,
they say
Philly.
Fiji, maybe?
No, it was Philly? I thought it was Philly.
Oh.
That's hilarious. Yes, Dave, we have a live report.
You know,
let's go live to Dave in Thailand.
So the official Chicago Bears Twitter feed last night tweeted at the what's her name?
JoJo the Train.
Yes. First they tweeted, don't do it, # The Bachelorette. And then after she picked Roger's brother, they tweeted, no, !! times three, # The Bachelorette.
Good to see the Bears in the middle of camp are worried about what's happening.
See, they were watching.
All right, so JoJo the Tramp picked the Aaron Rodgers brother.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work out.
See, I only saw like 5 minutes of the entire show, and I saw the part where she was really mad because he didn't ask for the father's approval.
Yes, he didn't. Mm-hmm.
So what swung it? Oh, wait, I just realized I don't care. It's 7 o'clock. We'll come back to the news next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Wouldn't it be great if we actually got along with Russia? Am I wrong in saying that? Wouldn't it be great? Okay? You know... Russia, like us, has nuclear weapons, folks. It would be really nice if we got along with Russia and others that we don't get along with right now. And wouldn't it be nice if we teamed up with Russia and others, including surrounding states and maybe NATO, and we knocked the hell out of ISIS and got rid of these people? Wouldn't that be nice? What?
7:12. Here we are, 4 or 5 days, whatever it's been, after Donald Trump sort of enticed Russia to go ahead and hack the DNC and then try to write it off as being sarcastic. Was that the only time Russia has been dipping into our elections? Eli Dorado's director of technology policy at the Mercatus Center, and he can talk a little bit about this, on the recent hacks and how much more of it's going on and whether we're able to defend it at all. Good morning, Eli.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you being on. So because the news cycle is really suffering from ADD like never before, I can't believe we're not still talking about the fact that Russia apparently is trying to impact this presidential election. That's why it's important to talk about this and important to bring you on to discuss it. So let's start with the obvious. Are we defending it? Are we able to defend it?
To defend in terms of cybersecurity?
Yeah. What's the state of our cyber?
We are extremely vulnerable to cybersecurity. You know, part of this is just that cybersecurity is very hard, and part of it is, I think, that we've kind of struck the wrong balance. The U.S. government has adopted a posture of that it's important, of course, to defend our systems, but it's also important to be able to invade other systems. And so so we haven't always done the most that we can to lock down our computers. And so we've discouraged things like strong encryption. We've held on to vulnerabilities for offensive use instead of releasing them to the original software vendors like Microsoft or Apple to fix them. So we're quite vulnerable. It's not terribly surprising that you know, foreign governments are able to hack into our systems.
Well, I mean, you could certainly, if you're of my mind, you could go to the extent of saying it's advantageous for Vladimir Putin to have Donald Trump be the president because Trump's a fool and he can manipulate him. Hillary Clinton with her own world of problems, and the DNC, it is their responsibility to protect their information, isn't it?
It is, but it's not something that it's reasonable to expect them to be able to do against a nation state actor.
Right.
You know, these governments are so sophisticated in their ability to get into these systems that it's just if there's any system in the world that we want the NSA to get into, they can get in, and the same is true of Russia.
So do we believe or do we know that we have the best people working on this stuff? You know, because it's easy to jump to this conclusion, too. Why don't we go hire Anonymous? Why don't we go hire some of these legendary hackers, give them whatever money they want, and have them do the job for us?
Well, we have great people on our side, too. A lot of them are focused on our own espionage efforts, not our counter-espionage efforts, right? So we have a great team called Tailored Access Operations at the NSA, and they're top-notch, and they can get into just about anything. But defending is much harder.
The interim head of the DNC, Donna Brazile, indicated during the convention last week, there's more to come, that there's more hacked emails, and in her words, not mine, we're going to have more stuff to apologize for. Do we know that WikiLeaks is holding on to a bunch of stuff?
I think that she's absolutely right, that I think more will come out through WikiLeaks and possibly through other channels, not just DNC-related emails, but maybe Clinton Foundation emails, maybe the missing, you know, 30,000 missing State Department emails could come out. And I think people should be very, very careful about how to interpret the information that comes out, because Russia has this long history of engaging in disinformation campaigns. So what they'll do is they might release, these troves of emails and then subtly alter or forge additional emails. And so including some misinformation in there. And so, you know, if this breaks in October, it could be that there is something that's like really terribly incriminating that the candidate is not able to fully deny because 90% of it is true or something, but the 10% that's really horrible is not true. And so it'll just make her look bad. I think we all need to have to be very cautious about how we interpret even the released emails, even if we think that the majority of them are true.
So if Donna Brazile is being transparent here, one of my least favorite words lately, and comes forward and says, we've got stuff we're going to apologize for, why wouldn't it make sense to come out and apologize for it now and head the story off before it breaks?
I think that would probably be the best strategy to try to do as much possible now. At the same time, this is the middle of a presidential campaign, and so it's not a great time to do that. So I understand the hesitancy, and obviously from their perspective, the last thing they want to do is give momentum to Donald Trump.
But isn't that the only defense against this, that form of transparency?
I think being transparent is the best thing we can do to counteract this Russian strategy of disinformation. So absolutely, be transparent. For the American public, I think we need to be skeptical. We need to insist on careful attribution of information to original sources. In the long run, this is the new normal unless we change something. So in the long run, we need better security. We need that includes strong encryption, that includes doing a better job of disclosing vulnerabilities, that's how we're gonna move forward on this issue, because otherwise this is the new normal.
Yeah, and as a public servant, and really for everybody, you're entitled to have secrets. You're not entitled to be engaging in criminal mm-hmm. activity, and you're not entitled to be misusing the public trust. But I don't want people to confuse Julian Assange with a journalist, which is what he likes to be called, because he's a thief. Now, have there been some benefit from the WikiLeaks stuff? Sure, of course there have. But he's also out of control while he remains in hiding, so he's not my favorite guy either.
Well, Julian Assange is a really, if you read his writing, it's actually very interesting. His goal is not to make people more transparent. His goal is to make politicians more isolated, right? So to hunker down and to share information between a smaller group, and therefore make them less effective. So it's a really interesting strategy that he has, it seems to be working.
It's 7:20, and the guest again, Eli Dorado. Where do we read your stuff and stay in touch with you?
So you can find me on Mercatus.org and find me on Twitter at Eli Dorado.
I appreciate your time and the expertise. We'll do it again.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Eli Dorado, again, spell it Dourado. And the Mercatus website he mentioned is Mercatus. Julian Assange, Dave, is the guy that's been in hiding because of having sex with a minor forever. And if he came out, he would be arrested and exposing governments doing the wrong thing is a good thing. There's great danger to exposing everything because you think you should. And I don't know that this guy has a filter.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't care what information gets out.
Right, and the damage that it can cause. Mm-hmm. So
the Steve Cochran Show.
I think it was USA Today. A couple of them covered it accurately, what I said. But a couple of papers said, Donald Trump doesn't realize that the Crimea was already taken. I know it exact 2 years ago, approximately. Okay, approximately. It was taken during Obama's watch. So when I said, believe me, Russia's not going into Ukraine. All right? They're not going into Ukraine. The person said, but they're already in Ukraine. I said, yeah, well, that was 2 years ago. That's. I mean, you want to go back? You want to have World War III to get it back?
That's the worst explanation I've ever heard. It's so terrible. The Crimea? Kind of reminds me of the 2 Corinthians. Hey, that's the whole deal, isn't it? God, is he a fool. Fareed Zakaria writes a week at com for Time Magazine, hosts a Sunday show at CNN, and is an international journalist of some note. He's just about had it
with Mr. Trump. And Fareed Zakaria said this on CNN yesterday.
He comes back with a certain bravado and tries to explain it away with a tweet or a statement. I mean, he did it on Brexit. He did it on the nuclear triad. He did it really on how U.S. debt markets work. He thought that Tim Kaine was the governor of New Jersey. And now with this. But there's a term for this kind of thing. This is the mode of a bullshit artist. And, you know, it's sometimes amusing. It's entertaining. If the guy is trying to sell you a condo or a car, but for a president of the United States, it's deeply worrying.
Yeah, because you take power combined with stupid, combined with money, and you got yourself trouble, kids. That's kind of the recipe for Dr. Evil. There is the good money and the bad money. And there's a lot of folks with a lot of money who are coming out and smacking Donald Trump around. Michael Bloomberg is a billionaire many times over. You saw what he said at last week's Democratic National Convention. Mark Cuban, you know, if you did talk to Mark Cuban and people around him, they would say he's done very well. Mark Cuban called Trump's campaign an S show and said that he was a jag off, among other things, and also said that he's not worth anything close to what he said he's worth. And Warren Buffett, the kindly 85-year-old mega billionaire who has endorsed Hillary Clinton, it's just about had it with this discussion of Donald Trump's taxes and why he won't release them. Now, there's no audit that takes this long, kids. There just isn't. And by the way, the fact that he won't release any of his taxes makes the whole thing even more fraudulent, because his taxes would be a window into who he really is. Maybe he's not that rich. Maybe he hasn't given a dime to charity. Maybe he's got a lot of investments tied to Russia and other countries. These are the things he wouldn't want you to know. For a guy whose signature is rich and successful, well, what if he's not that rich and successful? This is Wizard of Oz stuff. What if you expose him for who he truly is? Well, Warren Buffett's got a pretty simple idea.
One point, and he said it several times, is that he can't do it, can't release it because he's under audit. Now, I've got news for him. I'm under audit, too. And I would be delighted to meet him any place, any time between now and election. I'll bring my tax return. He can bring his tax return. Nobody's going to arrest us. It is not. There are no rules against showing your tax returns. And just let people ask us questions about the items that are on there. You're only afraid if you got something to be afraid about.
Yeah, you don't have to believe me. You don't have to believe anybody else has talked about it. That's Warren Buffett. That's Warren, all the money I'd ever need and all the money Trump will ever need, Buffett. That's Warren friggin' Buffett. And Warren Buffett says, look, I'll show mine, you show yours.
What is he, the second richest man in the world now?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, depending on the day. Yeah.
Right.
And no response from Trump yet on that. But how could there be? Because Trump is so worried about Crimea. Or as he calls it...
The Crimea.
The Crimea.
I think it was USA Today. A couple of them covered it accurately, what I said. But a couple of papers said, Donald Trump doesn't realize that the Crimea was already taken. I know it exactly. 2 years ago, approximately. Okay? Approximately. It was taken during Obama's watch. So when I said, believe me, Russia's not going into Ukraine. All right? They're not going into Ukraine. The person said, but they're already in Ukraine. I said, yeah, well, that was 2 years ago. That's, I mean, do you want to go back? You want to have World War III to get it back?
What? His explanation gives me motion sickness. It's 7:30. We're coming back with the big story next. You know, it's you got to laugh. Otherwise, you might as well just start crying now.
Yeah.
And for those of you who wouldn't change from Trump no matter what happens, anybody other than that, listen to that and tell me that's the next president of the United States. We got to get Weldon Johnson back on here. They should just stay in the studio. It's 7:30. Big story after this on 720 WGN.
The Crimea.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Dave, you got one?
Well, I did have a brief karaoke career.
All right.
It was one time.
What was your song?
Your song.
Elton John, your song.
That's
not an easy song to sing.
Yeah, let's hear it.
There you go. No.
Dave Bennett does Elton John's song.
I don't think we really need to do it.
Come on.
Right, what are the lyrics? Because I forget.
You can tell it.
Everybody, this is your song.
Listen to that.
Maybe simple. Quite simple, but.
Now that you're gone.
Yeah, now that you're
gone. I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind. See, I can't hit those notes anymore.
No, but that was good. You kind of want Barry White on.
Your voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus.
And you can tell everybody this is your song. Whispering karaoke. It's going to catch on.
What brought this up?
I don't know. We just needed a palate cleanser.
I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that I put down the words.
Give me my Dave. You're the lime sherbet of this show.
How wonderful life is.
Sing. You know you want to sing.
Yeah, I'm biting my tongue.
7:45. We'll get to traffic in a second, but Ryan Burrow sent along a story this morning that I think Grzanich covered this in the news a few minutes ago. If you're thinking about flossing, apparently give it up. Flossing, no longer any good. That's right. The federal government has recommended flossing since 1979. But when they issued its latest guidelines this year for dental health, the flossing recommendation was removed. In a letter to the AP, the government said the effectiveness of flossing has never been researched. As required, the AP looked at the most rigorous research. That'd be rigorous flossing research, which, yes, was a band I was in. And in that rigorous flossing research over the past decade, 25 different studies showed that the use of a toothbrush with a combination of toothbrush and flossing by way of comparison showed that flossing was weak and unreliable.
Yeah, and it makes your gums bleed.
Well, if your gums bleed, you're not taking care of your gums.
I know.
The American Academy of Periodontology acknowledges the scientific evidence on this is weak. Still, they urge patients to floss to help avoid gum disease. You know, I use toothpicks. I'll do whatever. I can't stand the feeling of any food caught in my teeth. It's just, I won't do it.
Especially when you eat popcorn. And
I'll put a little C4 in there, blow it out. I mean, whatever it takes.
Popcorn, you find a kernel stuck in there like 3 days later. It's kind of gross.
Yeah, you don't want it. Yeah.
Got to floss.
So I don't, you know, dentists all over listening as you're driving to work this morning going, what? Well, that is the federal government saying flossing is no longer necessary. Now, day of appointment flossing, you're not fooling your dentist.
No, no, oh, yeah. They know that's when your gums bleed.
I do that
if you
all
just
the
wait
time.
Till the
you floss yeah. that morning to come in. You've been flossing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, totally. Never miss a day.
But see, if this study is finding flossing weak and unreliable, it means people are not flossing properly.
And regularly.
And regularly.
Dave flosses every 15 minutes.
Pretty much.
Well, yeah. Dave, your dad was a dentist, wasn't
correct.
He?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. So I started flossing at an early age.
Is there any way to keep this news from your father? He feels so good.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to tell him. I don't think he needs to hear this at 93.
Yeah. I had a dentist in the late 1960s tell me to start flossing.
Yeah. You know. And then it was rope. They actually just gave me a chunk of rope.
It was the unwaxed stuff.
Right, of course it was.
Caught between your teeth.
Oh, that was nasty stuff.
Yeah.
So stringy.
Your dad, if he hears this study, I believe the first words out of his mouth, and any self-respecting 93-year-old would say this, would be, Dad gummit!
Yeah,
right?
That doesn't really sound like him.
No?
No.
He wasn't a Western cowboy?
No, not especially.
Okay. 7:48, we'll get traffic here. Mary's here with it. The biggest news story of the day. Really should be the fact that we're involved in military airstrikes over Libya again. And we'll get to somebody can fill us in on that story here in a few minutes, too.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Helpful listener tip from the text line at 312-981-7200. Compressed air for your computer. Just use that instead of flossing. Oh, I don't think so. You got a cavity, put a little of that on there, and then we'll peel you off the ceiling. 7:51, new U.S. airstrikes over Libya. Let's find out about it. Kenneth Moton is with us, at Kenneth Moton, M-O-T-O-N. Am I pronouncing your last name right, Kenneth?
You got it, Steve.
Thanks for coming on. What do we know about what we're doing now?
Well, we know that broader campaign against ISIS has got
a little broader when it comes to airstrikes and getting taking out those ISIS strongholds in Libya. This is rare because we've been focused on Iraq and in Syria, right. Taking out those key ISIS locations there. Well, this is happening at a time where the Libyan government has asked the U.S. and this U.S.-led coalition to help out because they feel that there are areas that they can get take the control back and get those areas where, especially this area called Sirte, is between Tripoli and Benghazi in Libya, in that northern Africa, Middle Eastern region there. And so the Libyan government has asked President Obama to authorize airstrikes, and he did just that on the recommendation of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter.
Do we know of the measure of success yet, or is it too early?
It is too early, but we know they hit a key area of, where these ISIS fighters were getting gas from, this big gas tanker. And that's what we know the Obama administration has been about, hitting those financial targets, hitting where they get their gas from, hitting those places that they know that ISIS fighters really have a hold on, those small communities, and really rooting them out.
The whole of North Africa has been an Al-Qaeda mess for a long time now. But this is ISIS specifically we're talking about, right?
This is ISIS, and that's another reason it's rare, is because when it comes to Northern Africa, we're used to talking about Al-Qaeda, and I'm sure the president wishes he could take it back at this point, but you remember when he said that he believed that ISIS was the JV team of Al-Qaeda? But that's because Al-Qaeda was in, they had a stronghold of Africa, and we know they're in Africa, but we know that ISIS is also in Africa, but the focus has been on Iraq and Syria, taking out ISIS there. But now that focus has switched a little bit to Libya at the request of the Libyan government.
And are we going this alone, or is it coalition help?
It is definitely coalition help, and we've got our coalition member, you know, asking us, and that's when that's part of this campaign, this part of this coalition. And also, you got to win the PR war. The fact that you have this 60-nation coalition, as the White House often says, that is working to degrade and ultimately destroy ISIS. And so when you have this coalition partner asking for help, you're definitely going to oblige.
Well, and that's the other reason why Trump's comments on NATO last week were so ridiculous, or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was. I lose track. I need a Trump map. But the fact of the matter is, coalition strikes are key. And we're not a member of NATO or any other coalition just to help those coalitions. We're the big dog in the neighborhood. But also, it spreads the blame amongst the propagandists to not just lay it on us, doesn't it?
You're right, and that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the leader of the free world, is that, yes, this, I mean, many of the military actions that are happening overseas there, they are U.S.-led. You've got this U.S.-led coalition to stop ISIS, because if you stop ISIS in northern Africa, if you stop them in Syria and Iraq, then that keeps them from spreading to the West, and those Lone Wolf-inspired attacks that happen in Europe, because we know Europe is on edge, and we know about San Bernardino, we know about what's happening here in this country when it comes to lone wolves trying to attack, you know, city centers. And so that's the point. When you read them out in those small communities like Sirte, Libya, then that will keep them from getting to Tripoli. It'll keep them out of Benghazi. It'll keep them from these major cities from committing these attacks and suicide bombings that will eventually and could reach, you know, the West.
I appreciate your time. Obviously, we'll talk again about this, but thanks for the update.
Thanks, Steve.
Take care. That, again, is Kenneth Moton, at Kenneth, M-O-T-O-N, as Libya is getting hit and hit hard by American and coalition airstrikes to control the spread of ISIS there in the ways that we weren't able to get it done and didn't get it done over Iraq before the cancer there spread. At 7:56 in the 8 o'clock hour, Dean Richards and Teddy Greenstein on the Olympics. I got a bone to pick with Teddy Greenstein. Teddy Greenstein wrote a piece today about all the ways that the Olympics are going to be covered. And did he call you, Dave? Did Teddy call you about get your opinion about covering the Olympics?
No, he did not.
No, he didn't call me either. Called a lot of other people.
Apparently.
I don't know what to tell you. We'll put Teddy on the air. I don't know if he's going to be on all the other shows he's sucking up to, but we'll put Teddy on this morning. And at 7:56, a big thank you to this audience, which continues to support this show, and I can't thank you enough for it, and I should thank you more. But record high ratings since the return in 2013. Thank you very much for that and for your continued support. At 7:57, news is next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Wasn't me, that was Dave.
Are you okay?
That was Dave. He was doing his whispering karaoke thing.
Do you need a doctor?
I got to say, if you do have medical issues, get your own show, because a great place to go down with a grabber would be live on the air, don't you think?
Oh, great rating stunt.
Well, not just for ratings, but also people would go, well, that guy sounds like he needs help.
Right. Yeah, that definitely would help. It would be really great if you can say, this coming Thursday at 7:20,
yeah,
I'm going to be having a grabber, and that way, you know, you can get a couple of days of promotion out of it.
Well, nobody's done that. How come nobody's had a timed grabber? Yeah, this is the kind of important stuff Dean and I work out, way in advance when we rehearse this segment.
Right. That's also the my favorite band that you were in, by the way, the Timed Grabbers.
They were good. You're not lying.
Had nothing with a heart attack, but it was quite a stage presentation.
Hey, didn't you talk to Will Smith last weekend?
Yeah.
I saw a great quote from Will Smith yesterday, and I was going to read the story, and then I decided I was too tired. But the headline was, somebody asked him about Jared Leto doing the Joker in Suicide Squad, and Will Smith just shook his head and said, I don't like Jared Leto. Is that because he's so good at being the Joker he scared him?
I think he probably was kidding, because I interviewed them all one-on-one. We've got a great cut from Jared Leto this morning talking about taking on this role. But before we did the one-on-one interviews, they had a big press conference for some of the press, and I sat, and Will Smith and Jared Leto were getting on great and joking around and teasing each other. Now, I will say this, not only Will Smith, but many of the other cast members told me that Jared Leto was so into this role and, you know, is very method acting. Like, he was always, he would just stay in character all the time. That's the way that he does it. To concentrate more, he just stays in the role, and would often give gifts to fellow cast members, like gifts that you might get from the Joker. Like, I don't remember if it was Viola Davis. One of the cast members gets a nice gift-wrapped box from him, opens it, and there's a live rat in the box.
Okay, freak show. That's taking it one step too far for me.
Well, then don't open that package that I sent you.
No, he's a tremendous actor, but isn't this what Daniel Day-Lewis does, right? Like, when he was Abraham Lincoln, he was Abraham Lincoln forever?
Some actors do this. Some actors like to stay in character all the time.
I get it, but I don't get it. You know what I'm saying?
I think Heath Ledger did the same thing when he played the Joker.
Oh, he did do that. And the reason we know that is because the poor cleaning staff here at the Tribune Tower was completely freaked out because Heath Ledger, when they were shooting on Lower Wacker, would ride a scooter in full Joker makeup,
right,
like up and down Lower Wacker, and he'd come over here and he'd do donuts in the parking lot at the Tribune Tower, and the little Polish cleaning ladies were outside smoking on the loading dock, and he scared the crap out of them.
What is this man with the hair in this scooter?
All right, so here's Jared Leto talking about what?
The Joker is one of the great on-screen villains of all time. Brilliantly played by Jack Nicholson, brilliantly played by Heath Ledger. Those are some huge shoes to step in, and he talked about that.
When I got the call and was asked to play the Joker, I was definitely, I felt the pressure. I felt the responsibility to these performances and to these other actors, Cesar Romero, Mark Hamill, Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger. Beautiful performances, really unforgettable performances. But in a way, it was so inspiring to see how fearless they all were with their work. It really motivated me.
Do you try to draw from some of those? Like homage almost to some of those?
I didn't pull from any of the performances. What I got from those performances was more inspired by how brave they all were, by how they just threw caution to the wind and they dove in so deep.
And here's a rat.
Who's your favorite Joker of all time?
Because
Heath Ledger was unbelievable. But I got to tell you, Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson, boy, I don't know.
So good.
They were so great. And tomorrow I'm going to tell you what I think of the Suicide Squad movie.
So what did you think of it?
Tomorrow. But I'll tell you this. Jared Leto is the standout in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If Suicide Squad were a little lady crossing the street, would you help her?
I'd wait until tomorrow to help her. I'd ask the truck that's barreling her way at 70 miles an hour. You could hold on just for 24 hours, because tomorrow I will help you across the street.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
What'd you think of the movie?
Tomorrow? Aren't you glad I didn't say tomorrow?
Coming up, Channing Tatum, Michael Douglas, and Shannon Doherty news. America's Hope in 2016. It's Dean Richards live from Channel 9. I'm putting pressure on you, but you know, we really don't have much going on. I mean, you're the guy.
I can take it.
We continue the list of important show business stories. This is not a good story about Shannon Doherty.
No.
She's not doing well at all. Huh?
No. She was diagnosed with breast cancer last February, had a mastectomy in May, and has been going through treatment. But yesterday announced that the breast cancer has spread to her lymph nodes, may have spread further in her body right now. She's going through more testing. But she will undergo more chemotherapy. She will undergo radiation in hopes of stopping this. But this is not a good development.
Short of being a doctor, very few people know cancer like you do because of all the years that you've researched and done the cancer documentary stuff that you've done. It's just, do we know if this is a particularly aggressive form that she has? Or
she hasn't announced a stage of cancer, but I'm guessing that if the cancer was found in her lymph nodes, that's fairly aggressive when that happens. If they suspect that once it gets into the lymph nodes, there's a great chance of the cancer spreading to other parts of the body. So that does sound like it's kind of aggressive. Doesn't mean it's a death sentence by any means, but people have certainly survived it, but it's going to be pretty difficult. She's going to have to go through at least another round, one round of chemotherapy, maybe more than that, and radiation. It's going to be very, very difficult for her. So if you're prone to saying a prayer for somebody, she needs it right now.
And I will always recommend, and I know you're sharing this, Gilda's Club Chicago,
yep,
for the great work they do. And, you know, one of the best things they do is this group therapy thing they do with people who are going through what you're going through, because you'd have everybody in the world loves you to death, but unless they know what you're dealing with and how you feel, it's maybe not so easy to talk to them about it. And you could do that. That's just one of the aspects of what they do at Gilda's Club, so couldn't say nicer things about that.
Yeah, with all the years of doing the breast cancer special, we've had so many survivors on the program. Thankfully, most of them are great. I keep in touch with lots of them. They just check in and let me know how they're doing, which is really nice. But quite a bit, I don't know if the majority, but quite a bit of the comments that people who are living with the cancer go through are well-intentioned comments from friends and family members who don't know how to deal with this.
Sure.
They don't know how to deal with the shock and the grief, and they say things that are unintentionally hurtful and painful and scary to people. That's why places like Gilda's Club is so great, because other people who have lots of different kinds of cancer are all going through the same thing. They're experiencing the same things. You get that comfort of knowing that you're not alone in this, but these are people who are going through it. They kind of know what to say. They kind of know, you know, sensitivity of, you know, what's going on right now. So can't recommend them enough. Plus, they have a place in their building here in Chicago called Noogie Land. And how do you not like any place that's got a Noogie Land?
Noogie Land is very, very positive. Maybe this is too much information for people, if a show goes really well, I'll grab Dave as he's walking out of the studio, and yep, I'll give him some noogies.
Yep. It's always a good thing, Dean, because it means the show went well.
I know it.
And, Dean, if you were here, if you weren't over at Channel 9, it'd be noogies for you, too.
I would force you to do it, whether you wanted to or not. That's how much I like the Noogie.
It wouldn't even be an HR violation. All right, so they're going to remake Splash.
Yeah, the old 1984 movie with Tom Hanks. And
84, 32 years
ago? How about that?
Holy crap, I'm old.
Yeah, that's true. Tom Hanks, Daryl Hannah, the mermaid that, boy falls into the water. Mermaid saves his life. They kind of fall in love. But get the twist now. I'm not sure if you're going to be on board with this twist. Channing Tatum is going to star in this film. He is going to be a merman.
Yeah.
He's going to be a merman.
No. That's not a good look.
Actress Jillian Bell. Well, he's going to be shirtless the whole movie, Mary.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but with the fin thing, that's going to be weird.
And then who's the female lead?
Jillian Bell, who starred opposite him in 22 Jump Street. She's been in lots of episodes of Workaholics. She's one of the co-workers in the office place in Workaholics. You'd definitely know her face if you saw her. But she's going to be the love-struck human this time. Ron Howard, who directed the original film, which I had forgotten, he's going to produce this one. So,
are there mermen? I mean, we know mermaids are real. Are there mermen?
Sure.
Of course.
I don't know how they go to the bathroom.
Well,
that's what I was wondering, is how do mermen and mermaids go to the bathroom if they have,
catheter?
Okay.
I don't know. I have no idea. And Michael Douglas is, this is another story where this is one of these time flies things.
Yeah.
Probably not for the kid. But Michael Douglas's 30-something-year-old son just got out of prison?
Yeah, he's been in prison a pretty long time.
He was, like 7 years?
Yeah, I think something like that. He had a really, really bad drug problem, was dealing heroin and meth, and got released from prison. While he was in prison, his girlfriend was smuggling heroin into him in the jail, which
seems like she missed the memo.
Yeah, well, she went to jail as a result of that. He went into 2 years of solitary confinement as a result of that. But I've seen pictures of him like the last couple of days. He looks fantastic. He looks so healthy and great. He's living in a halfway house in Brooklyn right now. He's going to write a book on his experience dealing with drug addiction and his experience behind bars. So good stories come out of here. Everyone is saying that his time in jail and the solitary confinement, this is a classic case of how it really helped to turn somebody around.
He's got his whole life ahead of him still.
Yeah,
I think he's a young guy. He's 35-ish, something like that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right, a couple of notes from the texters.
Happy stories today.
Yeah, apparently Jared Leto gave Jimmy Fallon a live snake in a box on last night's show and the Tonight Show.
Yeah, not a surprise.
Charming.
There's something else that he gave one of his castmates, but it's too disgusting to mention. I'm going to have to email it to you.
Yeah, that's the poo thing, right?
No, it's even more disgusting.
Okay, well, feel free not to email me. I'll give you less noogies if that happens. Somebody else asked about the Shannon Doherty story again. Is there any charity or anything that's tied to that you're aware of?
I have not heard of any specific charities directly related to her, but if you want to help people who are going through this, American Cancer Society still is one of the best umbrella groups. Gilda's Club, as we talked about, there are a variety of organizations that are in the suburbs that do amazing work helping people who are living with cancer.
It's Dean Richards live from Channel 9. What are you doing the rest of the show?
I'll have happier stories for everybody
tomorrow. It really was kind of a downer today for us. I don't know. But what are you going to do? The material is what it is.
It is what it is. I don't make this stuff up as much as people think I do.
I never make anything up on this show.
No, I know. We all deal with facts. I have a dentist appointment today.
Oh, well, good luck with that.
Make sure you floss.
I've been flossing like crazy the last 2 days.
Yeah, because that's definitely the time to do it.
Because they can't tell
when you
don't do it regularly.
Hey, I saw yesterday was the former producer of this show, the lovely and talented Ann Johnsos, who says hi to everybody.
Is that right?
And she looks great. She's doing great. And so hi from Ann Johnsos to everybody.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, hi, Ann.
I saw former producer Kevin Powell the other day. I haven't seen him for a long time.
Yeah, well, he's big time now.
He's a big time sports reporter, yeah. but has lost quite a bit of weight.
Yes, he's lost half of Kevin. That's the technical term, based on his previous high number. Half the Kevin is gone.
I'm not sure that I can endorse that with anybody because it makes the rest of us look bad.
Supporting his weight loss?
Yeah.
for your bit.
Yeah, I think he should put it back on because it's making everyone goes, wow, look how great Kevin is. And then you and I walk in the room.
Right. I know Taco Bell would agree with that statement because their earnings are down considerably right. in the last year.
Yeah, they've had to close 100 locations in the Midwest.
Kevin Powell putting people out of work right and left. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you. Bye. 829, big story next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Books given 95. Participants... 94. Abstention, nil. Void, nil. Valid ballots, 94. The city of Chicago, having obtained the least number of votes, will not participate in the next round.
Ah, what a proud day that was. We're on the doorstep. Are you glad the Olympics aren't here? Do you wish they were? What do you think, Swanee?
Well, it would have been in some ways a plus for the city. Other things.
Clustered traffic-wise.
Traffic was unbelievable. I can tell you that a lot of people in my neighborhood that owned condos and townhouses.
Yeah, they're going to make some
money. They were going to leave. And they're going to rent it out, and they could name their price.
Yeah. You ready?
I'm ready.
You would have liked to have the Olympics here?
I mean, so the traffic would have been a little worse. Guess what? Traffic ain't great the way it is.
Yeah. I would have liked
it
would have
been a little worse. Yeah.
Maybe a little.
Yeah, I would have liked. And I guaranteed it would happen. And like so many of my predictions, it didn't happen. Remember, that's when I said, if it didn't happen, I will synchronize swim in a kiddie pool on Michigan Avenue.
And you did.
And I did.
You did.
Yes. Yes.
I'm so excited. I love the Olympics. Absolutely love them. I might have to quit watching The Bachelorette, too.
And isn't your cousin working these games?
Yes, Christian is working for NBC.
Legendary cyclist. Remember, he won the gold on the big wheel.
He did. That's right. When he was 9.
Yeah. So I was very excited. You know, Teddy Greenstein's a friend of the show.
Sure.
A friend of ours for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fellow Northwesternite.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. So I was very excited when I saw Teddy's story this morning on covering the Olympics, and then even more excited when I saw the experts that he spoke with. There's David Kaplan from ESPN Radio. Yeah, and then Dan Bernstein from The Score, and then of course Olympic expert extraordinaire Eric Ferguson from the Eric and Kathy show. And the great thing about Eric is you could either ask him Olympics questions or the latest from Maroon 5, and he could give you either.
He could tell you,
yeah.
So he asked you, I'm sure, as the number one talk show in Chicago.
No, I actually didn't. Huh? No. Huh. No, I don't see you in here either.
No.
Did he ask you?
No.
Let me go live to Teddy. Teddy, what time are you on with Kaplan, Eric Ferguson, and Dan Bernstein today?
Steve, here's the deal. You and I are practically married. I can't quote you in stories. I mean, everybody would know it's just an illegitimate situation.
Yes. Are you sure you have my cell phone? I just want to make sure you hadn't lost my cell phone.
It would just too many conflicts of interest there. People would say, oh, he's changing the quotes to make Steve look even better than he is. I mean, he's known Mr. Cat forever. He's practically, in the wedding of Mary in a few weeks. So, I had to leave you out of it.
Did you get good stuff out of Eric Ferguson? Did you get a lot of Olympic insight?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the great stuff I'm saving for the book. that's where this is really all about. I wanted to talk to Eric for that story because, as you all know, I mean, the Olympics, it's part sports and a lot spectacle, especially with Rio. I mean, I think people are fascinated by all the stuff that's already gone wrong even before the opening ceremony. So I wanted to get a feel for, on a non-traditional sports show, how much Olympics is going to be talked about. It sounds like you guys are going to be diving in a bunch as well.
Yeah, well, how would you know? I mean,
I've been listening to the last minute. I heard you got some big fans there.
All right, I'm mostly concerned about you. Why are you going?
Oh, because I was asked and it beats covering football training camp. Ain't that right, Mr. Cat, Dave Bennett?
Well, I guess I don't have that to compare it to, so I don't know.
Have you done an Olympics?
I never have. I'd say I'm giving an outsider's perspective. I'm not an Olympics guy. I haven't seen any live Olympics since I was 11 years old in the LA Coliseum in 1984, watching Carl Lewis and some of those guys. So this is going to be cool. I mean, I look at this as probably the only one I'll ever cover, so I want to get out to as many sporting events as I can. I mean, I look at the IOC as a completely awful, corrupt organization. So believe me, I'm not going to be seduced by anything that happens out there in Rio. And but I think it's going to be a great time. People who have covered Olympics say it's the best thing they've ever done. So I'm fired up.
84. I mean, we all have memories of 84. Remember when Carl Lewis was crossing and busting the tape and his Roids dealer was right next to him? Remember that?
Oh,
the Roids
man.
Dealer finished second right next to him.
A clean one. I thought he was okay.
Well, was he clean? I don't know. Why would I want to spread rumors? We're going to break for traffic. Hang on a second because I want to talk to you about the storylines that are breaking there. Because there's going to be a lot of fascinating things to cover, including potential danger, like we've had to deal with at every Olympics, I suppose, going all the way back to 1972 in Munich.
The city of Chicago, having obtained the least number of votes, will not participate in the next round.
This is my kind of town, Chicago.
It's not like we don't know how to bribe people.
Town,
just picture somebody Chicago. Forgot the envelope full of cash for the IOC.
My kind
Teddy Greenstein from the Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com, Teddy Greenstein Incorporated, Teddy Greenstein Enterprises. I understand, by the way, that you almost missed this interview because you were making your daughter a sandwich.
Yeah, she is going to soccer camp today at the fire pitch. I made the sunflower butter and banana sandwich. I'm sure that's a personal favorite of yours.
What kind of hippie situation are you living in there?
It's all right. She's a red meat eater, too. Only medium rare on the steak, so I got her.
Before we get back to the Olympics, if you were not in Brazil, would you be at the producer Sandberg wedding?
I mean, I just found out that I'm not walking Mary down the aisle, and I'm kind of crushed. Yeah. So we might have to cut this interview off for me to get a good cry in.
Yeah, you know, she didn't invite me?
Well, you and I would then be, we'd be at a bar somewhere. We'd be considering our lives and why she doesn't like us anymore. I'm the same boat as you, my friend.
Well, he has a comedy show that night, so he has a prior commitment.
Do you know that she waited for us to announce the date of the comedy show before she announced her wedding date?
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
She told me that was part of the strategy. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I didn't say that.
All right. So here's some of the storylines that are coming out of Rio. First, the danger. Don't we talk about terrorism with everyone? And is this one more dangerous than any other one?
Well, this one, not so much terrorism, knock on something. It's more about just crime in general. I made a big mistake a couple weeks ago by watching the movie City of God. Have you guys seen that?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
10 years ago, there are about 100 people who get shot up in that movie, mostly for sports.
So, all in Rio.
Yeah, now that's a favela. And I don't think there'll be too many Olympic activities going on there. But, some people say it's an extremely dangerous place. It's still kind of third world. That said, where I'm staying, they say, is the Miami Beach of Rio. It's very touristy. And I mean, if these numbers are to be believed, 85,000 security personnel. So I'm just going to say right now, I like my chances to be okay.
What about the water? And I don't mean just the water that they're telling the competitors not to swim in and telling tourists not to stick their head in. Is the processed water, the water filtration appropriate?
I am not going to find out. I think I'll probably be showering in bottled water.
Right.
I mean, based on what we've seen and all the poop in the water and all those kind of numbers, that's really disgusting. So I am going to not be drinking much of tap water there, and I hope the fine people there won't be offended. Maybe I'll just, shower in beer or something.
Yeah, well, why not? Yeah. It's a good look, and plus a lot of people will smell like that anyway.
Right.
Teddy, what sort of precautions have you been advised to take before going down there?
Yeah, Dave, I felt really good about the trip until I had an editor who said, hey, you guys have to give us a safe word in case you get kidnapped. Like, really? And then there's other advice like carry a dummy wallet that you can just surrender so the crooks have something. And then there's some people giving advice of don't have maid service. Just leave a do not disturb sign on your door for 3 weeks so nobody goes in your room. I think all that stuff is probably alarmist beyond. So I think it just depends on if you're like a worry wart to begin with. I'm absolutely not. I wrote this column yesterday. You guys probably saw. I mean, I survived New York in the 80s when it was legitimately dangerous and nothing happened to me. So I think I'm going to be all right in Rio.
Yeah, look, it is what it is, right? I mean, you go where you're supposed to go. You do the work you need to do. There's going to be a billion people there that aren't normally there. So I think as long as you don't wander off the beaten path, you're probably fine.
Which is sad because I want to wander off the beaten path, you know? It's like I'm going to Rio. I just don't want to be hanging out in media shuttles the whole time. But I think I should probably avoid the brothels in the Amazon. I think that would be definitely advisable for me to do that.
It is advisable. It's also advisable that you not have too much of the local beverages and end up in a thong on the internet.
That's a good point.
I don't know if you saw some of the pictures that our friend Christine Brennan was tweeting out yesterday on her way from the airport with the soldiers.
What did she have? Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's so much security. She was the most she had ever seen, and she's covered a lot of Olympics. So, I mean, I got to think that from the standpoint of the military protection that's going to be afforded the tourists, the visitors, that from that standpoint, they've taken a lot of steps to try to make sure that Teddy and everybody else there is safe.
Thank you for mentioning.
Yeah, by the way, Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com. So how does this work for you from a coverage standpoint? Because the Tribune newspapers will have a lot of people covering specific sports. So where are you going to bounce around?
I'm just, I think I'm in a great spot. I think I can pitch features and columns and just, you know, really do whatever. We do have the LA Times. We got the Associated Press doing a lot of the main stuff. Like, I'm not interested in Michael Phelps, but maybe I want to go to swimming to write about this woman who made Haiti's national team, who's the first ever. And she's a student at the University of Chicago.
Right.
So she's the first woman to swim. So stories like that. Like, I've gotten friendly with a woman who's a marathoner who lives in Lakeview named Shireen Najim. She's Lebanese. She's already made it on the ski team, and now she's that. So I want to see a little Jimmy Butler. I want to see some women's soccer. I want to see table tennis. I was watching the documentary called Topspin last night. I think that's such a cool sport to watch. So I think they want me at the opening ceremony. So my thought is, if this is the only Olympics that I cover, I want to get my money's worth and see a lot of cool stuff.
You didn't mention golf.
Yeah, that's true. Dave, good point. I will definitely go out there for the first day. But I just feel like golf is not going to be terribly interesting. Maybe if Bubba or Ricky Fowler light it up, people are going to care. But, you know, when you look at the defections on the men's side and the fact that golf hasn't been there in 112 years, I just can't envision my editor saying, yes, I need to know how Henrik Stenson does in the second round.
Well, and the problem is for golf, it's already a world sport and there's already world competitions. So, yeah, lighting it up might be difficult without the main names there.
Yeah, I mean, they took SI.com took a poll of the PGA Tour players, and not only did the vast majority say they'd rather win a Players' Championship than a gold medal.
Wow. 27%
said they'd rather win the Texas Open. They'd rather win any PGA Tour stop. Now, that's probably because they've never known of a gold medal being an option, and maybe it'll be a bigger deal after this one. But heading in, my thought right now is that golf is going to be kind of a dud.
And what's the favorite thing you're looking forward to?
Oh, well, beach volleyball on Copacabana Beach, my friend.
Yeah,
That's going to be the first. But really, women's soccer, that U.S. team, is that's great stuff for me. So I'm hoping to see some there.
All right, you want to tell us your safe word or you want to keep it to yourself?
what's my favorite NFL team? J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. So if I call in and ask how Ryan Fitzpatrick is looking at Jets training camp,
send help.
There's a problem, yeah.
It's Teddy Greenstein. Where do we follow you, by the way? You want to throw out a social media handle somewhere?
Sure, at Teddy Greenstein on Twitter, and read the Tribune, buy a newspaper, help us out.
Yeah, Chicago Tribune at ChicagoTribune.com, or frequently found at Eric Ferguson's house. all right, buddy, be well. Travel safe.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Talk to you soon.
See you. Travel safe.
8:56, back after this. News coming up, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah. Hey. 910, Steve Cochran Show. Normally, and it's not because I don't like novels. I just have always had sort of an unofficial policy not to promote novels on the show. But occasionally a book comes along and you just go, what you got to talk about? Carolyn Parkhurst, a New York Times bestselling author, She wrote The Dogs of Babel, has a new book out called Harmony. And we talk a lot about special needs kids on the show because of my own experience with it. And, you know, with my brother and also with my daughter working with kids with autism every day. So this book struck me on a lot of different levels, and I'm pleased to welcome Carolyn to the program. Good morning, Carolyn. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Sure, and congratulations on this book.
Thank you.
How much was your own family life the influence to write it?
Quite a bit. I have a 14-year-old son who has Asperger's, and the experience of parenting him, the challenges and the ups and downs, sort of the daily struggles of it were very much on my mind when I started writing the book. And it's very much reflected in the mother's character, I think.
Right, but you build in a camp story here, which is kind of a unique way to tell the story, and some exceptional characters. Sell the book without giving it away.
Okay, it's about a family called the Hammonds, a mother, a father, and two daughters, one of whom is on the autism spectrum. And they live in Washington, D.C., but they are sort of running out of options for how to deal with their daughter, Tilly. She's kicked out of school, and, you know, they're having trouble figuring out what's going to help her. And they make the acquaintance of a man called Scott Bean, who is a self-styled parenting guru who is starting up a family camp in New Hampshire for families with kids with special needs. And the Hammonds give up their house and their life and move to New Hampshire to help him run this camp. And once they're isolated out there, Scott Bean becomes a little less predictable, and things start happening. Things go a little bit wrong.
And it's called Harmony. It's out and available everywhere. Get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose one. Download a third. It's good for all of us. How is your son doing?
He's, you know, a lot of things are easier than when he was younger because he's able to sort of, you know, understand things. He's got, you know, a fair amount of self-awareness, and, you know, he sort of understands the ways that he struggles. He's going to be starting high school in the fall, and, you know, we're sort of thinking ahead, like, if we're ever going to get this kid to go to college and live on his own, he's going to have to learn a whole lot of stuff that sort of comes naturally to other kids, you know. There are a lot of areas, social situations, and, you know, just the ordinary things of daily life, like how to make yourself a sandwich, you know, that are easier for some kids than they are for him.
Right. And I think one of the things that folks struggle with who don't have any special needs kids in their life is not understanding that the autism in general is an umbrella term that encompasses very high functioning kids to kids who have very little function and everything in between.
Yeah. And I find, you know, it's very interesting, you know, that there are kids who, you know, are not even verbal, can't speak at all. And, you know, and then kids like my son who, you know, he's always sort of been a little bit different, but, you know, he wasn't diagnosed till he was five. We sort of were going on the idea that he was like a quirky genius for a while
right,
there.
Right,
you know,
right.
He taught himself to read very early. And so, you know, we thought, well, this is all good. But in fact, it sort of indicated that something was not going the usual way in his development. And that became clear once he started school.
The amazing thing, you know, and again, personal experience being what it is, but my brother is 58 this year, and growing up in a small town in upstate New York, there was no diagnosis for autism in the 60s, and it didn't come till long after that, and kids weren't mainstream. They were put in a special education room where the highest functioning, lowest functioning kids were all there, and they had one teacher who just tried to keep the peace and figure something out, so we didn't get much out of school. He's actually very self-reliant. He reads at about a second grade level, but he's able to travel because he's not afraid to ask people questions. He's got a significant speech defect, but he's easy to understand once you spend a little time talking to him. And he likes people, so he's not afraid to talk to people. And, you know, he's just my inspiration and my hero because he gets up every day and he tries to be happy and he has a good day.
Yeah, I think that's what we all want for our kids. You know, sometimes having a kid with special needs kind of narrows it down for me. What exactly is parenting? You know, my job is to get my kid able to live in the world without me, you know, ideally.
Right.
You know, there's a lot he has to learn. It's going to be more of a challenge for him to fulfill his potential than it is for other kids. But, you know, I think he's a great guy, and he's going to, you know, eventually, I hope, do okay.
Do other parents, other people, well-meaning or otherwise, say things that still bug you, or are you beyond that?
Well, I think I sort of let things slide a little bit. But, you know, I think a lot of parenting advice is, not helpful because it sort of takes this one-size-fits-all approach. And, you know, the usual recommendations for discipline and things like that have never worked with my son. And then I have a younger kid, a daughter, and, like, I was sort of amazed to realize that all the parenting books weren't just wrong. It was just that they didn't work for my first kid, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, people mean well. And I know that sometimes it's not obvious that my son has a disability or whatever. It's just like he's in public and he's too old to be having a meltdown in the post office, and yet he is, you know. And that's, I understand that people can be judgmental about that, but my role as a parent is to sort of get beyond any embarrassment and just try to be his advocate in whatever way I can.
And I say this a lot here in regards to a lot of things. With all the ways I could knock millennials if I chose to, both my kids are millennials, this generation gets it more right than any previously in regards to understanding everybody's got something, you know, whether it's depression, OCD, whatever. So kids who are dealing with whatever level of special needs my brother or your son or others listening might have, I just think kids are much more fair about it than they've ever been.
I think that's true. And I think that's because it's become more a part of normal daily life, because there's more diagnosis, there are more resources. You know, I'm glad to be living in the time that I am. And, you know, I live in a city, Washington, D.C., so there's lots of doctors and whatever we need. And, you know, I feel lucky about that, because I'm sure it was much harder in the time when your brother was growing up.
Carolyn Parkhurst is a very successful author, and her new book's called Harmony. It's out and available everywhere, and get a couple copies and share it with your friends. Is it tougher to write a book that is still a novel but has, you know, family ties to it, or was it easier?
It was harder, I think. It took me 5 years to write this book, which is longer than my other novels, and I sort of worried the whole time, like, is it okay for me to be using my kids as material? You know,
right.
It's fiction. A lot has changed, but, you know, it's one thing to, you know, use a quirk of your spouse or your parents or something in fiction. But, you know, I'm the only mom these kids have. And so I had to be very aware of, like, not writing anything that was going to be embarrassing for them down the line or whatever. But at the same time, I wanted to be honest about what it's like for my son and what it's like for us as his parents and, you know, the ins and outs of it.
Sometimes it's tough in a special needs household for the siblings that are, quote, normal, even though I don't like using that term. What's your daughter think of the book?
You know, my daughter's 10 and hasn't read it. My son, the one who has Asperger's, has, and he really liked it. And I think my daughter will like it eventually. But I, you know, one of the narrators in the book is the 11-year-old neurotypical normal daughter
right.
of the family. And I was interested in that point of view just because of exactly what you just said. You know, I think that it can be hard for the siblings because the special needs kid gets a lot of attention, both positive
right.
and negative. And no matter how much we try to, like, give every kid what he or she needs, it's, you know, it's never quite the same for the sibling who has this tornado living in the house, you know.
Sure. And I salute your struggle. I don't understand it from your perspective, but I do understand it from being the sibling. And all I can tell you is, and everybody that's listening is, and you know this to be true, for all the heartbreak and ups and downs and beating emotionally you might take through the years, I've gotten so much more out of life because of my brother than I ever could have. And, you know,
absolutely.
Any of the circumstances.
I mean, yeah, my son has a mind unlike anyone else's I've ever known, and it's been really a joy to come to know the person he is.
Yeah, we're both lucky.
Yeah, absolutely.
The book's called Harmony. It's Carolyn Parkhurst. Congratulations on it. I assume you're already working on the next one or the next two, probably.
I am trying to think of something, but I usually need a little downtime once a book is finished to try to figure out what comes next.
Take whatever you deserve, because you do deserve some, and I hope this is a big hit.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being on. Harmony, Carolyn Parkhurst.
I just read about it in People magazine. They had it highlighted.
Good.
Yeah.
Good, good, good.
Awesome.
Got a copy of it for you here, I think.
Oh, thanks. Love to read it.
9:19. We'll take a break. Come back. We continue the Steve Cochran Show. This is 720 WGN.
Well, the media is very unfair. They're very biased. You look at CNN and you look at the New York Times. I mean, I call it the failing New York Times because it won't be in business for another probably more than a few years unless somebody goes in and buys it and wants to lose a lot of money. But the New York Times is so unfair. I mean, they write 3-4 articles about me a day. No matter how good I do on something, they'll never write good. I mean, they don't write good.
That's right, grammar fans.
They don't write good.
Grammar fans, the New York Times doesn't write good. Or actually, don't write good is specifically what he said.
He was really learned good grammar.
Yeah. Well, he's got words. He's got the best words. Donald Trump Every day, making news. And all we're trying to do is just inform you. Donald Trump has some thoughts on Hillary Clinton. And you may remember that Ben Carson at the RNC in Cleveland sort of tied Hillary Clinton to Satan. But previously, the Trumpster hadn't.
Did you see the Nielsen ratings came out? So my final speech against Hillary's final speech, not even a contest, won by 4 or 5 million people. Now, the press doesn't report that. As an example, when Bernie Sanders people all walked out, you had this mass exit, nobody showed it. And then when they showed Bernie, very angry, they're talking about Bernie, because he made a bad deal. He should have not made a deal. He would have gone down as done something really important. Once he made that deal, and believe me, he has buyer's remorse. You know, this guy has buyer's remorse. He looked at that, and he was so angry when they were talking about him, and his people are angry at him, and they should be. If he would have just not done anything, just go home, go to sleep, relax, he would have been a hero. But he made a deal with the devil. She's the devil. He made a deal with the devil. It's true.
There's your payoff. Hillary is now the devil. So you have your choice. You either have Trump or the devil. And look, I'm no fan of Satan. I can't even believe I'd even consider voting for Satan.
So she's no longer Crooked Hillary.
Now she's the devil.
She's the devil.
I don't know where you take it from devil. You know, once you've risen the opponent to the level of devil, what goes beyond devil? What's worse than devil? And you know what it is? It's Trump. And you can't say she's Trump. Thank you, Hillary. I appreciate it.
By the way, didn't he say that his ratings were 4 or 5 million more people watched his speech?
Yeah.
But the difference was 32.2 million to 29.8 million, according to Nielsen. Does that come out to 4 or 5 million?
2.4 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's half of what he said.
Who is rounding up?
A lot.
Trump, by the way, may be getting ready to already excuse his way out of November. Do we have the rigged? Is that where we're going? Is that next? Yes? Yeah. Listen up.
Bernie, poor Bernie, he looks so upset. He, you know what? He made a mistake. He shouldn't have made a deal. Sometimes he lost. First of all, it was rigged. And I'm afraid the election's going to be rigged. I have to be honest. Because I think my side was rigged. If I didn't win by massive landslides, I mean, think of what we won in New York and Indiana, California, 78%. That's with other people in the race. But think of it. I hear more and more that the election on November 8th, can you believe we're almost there?
How exactly would the election be rigged? I mean, against Trump. How would it be rigged against Trump?
Got me. I don't know.
I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of people that watch these things. I mean, in 1960, the election was rigged. And Richard Nixon, not one of your great people in history, Richard Nixon had an opportunity to actually challenge the results in Illinois and Texas, where the election was essentially stolen from him, and he chose not to for the good of America. So how would the election be? I don't understand it. You know,
well, how were the primaries rigged against him?
Yeah.
Didn't he win?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it.
One or two contests that he lost said that those were rigged.
Those are rigged?
Him.
So if they lose, if you lose, it's rigged.
Mm-hmm.
We continue with Trump, and one of my favorite pieces of Trump sound ever, and this is brand new, kids, it's hot off the presses. Donald Trump referring to the mess in Russia. You'll remember that he said all over the place, and here's the two things you know about Trump. If you insult him, he has to respond because he's a 12-year-old. And if he's caught saying something stupid, he has to come back and cover it up because he's a 12-year-old. Here's Donald Trump on what he really meant, as opposed to what he actually said about the Russian invasion of Crimea.
I think it was USA Today. A couple of them covered it accurately, what I said. But a couple of papers said, Donald Trump doesn't realize that the Crimea was already taken. I know it exactly 2 years ago, approximately. Okay, approximately. It was taken during Obama's watch. So when I said, believe me, Russia's not going into Ukraine. All right? They're not going into Ukraine. The person said, but they're already in Ukraine. I said, yeah, well, that was 2 years ago. That's. I mean, you want to go back? You want to have World War III to get it back?
Just. You can't document it. You can't chart it. You couldn't draw a diagram to explain what the hell he just said. And for the handful of people who said, well, I've heard other people call it the Crimea. No, you haven't. It's the Crimean Peninsula or Crimea.
The Crimea.
Yes. Crimea.
Sea, too.
Or the Crimean Peninsula. Not the Crimea. Not the two Corinthians. Not any of the things that continue to fall out of his fat head. It's 9:31. Big story next on 720 WGN.
The Crimea.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
All right, 9:43 now, and Big O rejoins us from, oh, he's walking down now, because I just looked up and he's not there. Big O was in the studio, but he'll be joining us in just a second. And coming up before 10 o'clock, we're just going to play a minute or so of the conversation I had with Walter Jacobson. Are you familiar with Walter Jacobson?
Yes, the legendary Walter Jacobson.
And does commentaries here on the station. But a little while back, I sat down with Walter, and we talked about all the elections he's covered and all the nonsense he's seen. And you can hear that all on a podcast, wherever podcasts are. Wherever are our podcasts, I'll tell you where they are. They're at WGNRadio.com. They're also at the WGN Radio app. They're on TuneIn. They're on iTunes. They're on iHeart. They're on this. They're on that. They're everywhere podcasts are. That's where they are. So check that out as well. As Orion Samuelson saddles up, one of the things I wanted to ask him about was the fact that the president did sign a food labeling bill this week. And is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think it's a good thing. It's, first of all, it's good because it's national. You know, on the 1st of July, Vermont set up its own labeling rule. And there's no way a food company in the U.S. can print labels just for one state. But when you
you'd have to have 50 different standards.
Yeah,
right?
You could have 50 different. So it's a National Food Labeling Act. I think it's great, and opponents think it's terrible. They're calling it the Dark Act, and you'd think World War III was upon us the way they react to it. That,
well,
oh,
who's opposing it?
Well, there are those GMO groups who think that GMOs will kill you, and they won't. We've had done 150 studies across the world and can find no health problem at all. But and, of course, my response to the deep critics who would not only consume GMOs but would ban their use, which would deny food for millions of people around the world, if you want to make sure your food is GMO-free, go to the organic food store.
Right.
Yeah, it's there.
So. And it's fine. You're going to pay more.
It's fine.
And you're also going to have to trust that it's organic.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So it depends on where you're getting it from.
USDA has set up the standards for GMOs and what is and what isn't. But it's interesting, as you watch this food labeling issue continue, that many foods that never, ever had GMOs now have a label saying GMO-free. Because they apparently think it sells.
Right. So if it says GMO-free, then more people will buy it. Well, it wasn't that long ago we all bought fat-free cookies because we thought fat-free cookies meant we could eat all of them.
Yeah,
doesn't turn out that way.
Yeah, not at all. And so the food labeling goes on, and you know my motto, if you eat, you die. If you don't eat, you die.
And it pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, right.
What we also know about GMOs is without GMOs and without GMO genetically modified food, wholly one-third of the world will starve to death.
Oh, I would say that's probably a low estimate, because if we don't keep up with the growth in population – with our food production, using biotechnology, and you know, we have done so much. When I grew up on the Wisconsin farm, if we got 50 bushels of corn to the acre, it was a good crop. Today, thanks to the biotechnology, we're getting 300, 320 bushels to the acre. Same amount of land, and producing that much more food.
And that's the thing, too. People, when they hear GMOs, and they don't take the time to figure out what GMOs are.
Right.
You're not eating styrofoam pellets out of a box.
No, you're not.
This is maximizing food production on farms that looks and tastes like the food you're eating now.
And let me give one example of genetically modified. The corn crop was at one time really harmed by the corn borer, the European corn borer, which would kill the plant before it could mature. Well, the GMO, the genetically modifying, took genes from seaweed, put it into the corn plant, and made it totally unpalatable to the moth that laid the eggs that produced the European corn borer.
And allowed the stalk to reach its potential and maturity and allowed us to have the corn.
So we don't have to spray the insecticide, which we did, in order to get rid of that moth and the subsequent European corn borer. We don't have to do that anymore. So we save pesticide coverage and all that sort of thing.
So there's an example of GMOs. Yeah, that's an example.
Yeah, just one example.
So when does this food labeling start? Next year sometime?
I think it'll take that long to get it into place, and there's going to be a lot of rule writing now, and then you have the comment periods and all of that. So I really haven't seen a date that they're going to put GMO labeling into place. But Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, a year and a half ago when I asked him about the issue, he said the only reason to label, in my opinion, is if something is dangerous. And he said, that's not the case.
Right. So it's being done, it's approved, and it's on the way.
And I think on a week from Friday, August 12th, we will get our first real crop report of the season when USDA takes actual acreage planted, weather and growth and all that, and we are going to have a bin-busting crop. I have never seen a year like this across the Midwest. Tomorrow I'll be flying Air Oregon up to Redwood Falls, Minnesota, and I'm sure I'll see nothing but lush green all the way, which this time of the year you normally don't. You see dry spots and brown spots. It's just an unbelievable crop year for corn and beans.
And perfect weather for it. That's the deal.
Really good weather. So I'm hoping for good weather tomorrow, so let's get our weather people with good flying weather tomorrow. Cause
I think we'll be fine, won't we? Air Orion cleared to take off?
I think we'll be cleared. Yeah, I think so.
How are things out at the track? I know you enjoy going out to Arlington to see the Duchessois family and Mr. Duchessois in particular, and how are things going?
Well, things I think are going well. They've come up with some great promotions, and of course the next big one is Arlington Million. And with our travel schedule, haven't been able to get to the track 2 or 3 weeks now, but we'll be there August 13th for the Arlington Million. And according to Mr. D, they're getting some top horses and foreign horses. And I'm sure you'll be talking to Howard Sudbury or somebody.
That's before, the rumor, yeah.
Yeah, before the Arlington Million, so yeah. And we look forward to it. Always fun.
One other thing, I want to say hi to all of our friends at CME. CME group who are supporters and listeners all the time.
Yep.
And we should probably take time to at least cite a few people. Anybody in particular we should say hi to there?
Well, we should say hi to Terry Duffy, who started out, he grew up on the south side of Chicago and somehow got into being a runner on the floor, fell in love with the futures market, and the south side Chicago boy became a top trader in live hog futures. He is now chairman of the CME.
Not bad for a city kid.
Good friend, yeah, and a good guy, really is. Right. I think I'll probably see him at the Illinois State Fair, which, by the way, opens this week, and or next week it opens, and I think I'll see him because he generally comes down to the fair and supports the 4-H and FFA kids at the auction. So looking forward to it.
And the auction of the championship steer.
Tuesday, August 16th. That's Salute to Ag Day, and we'll be down there for that, for the various programs, and then MC the auction that night to see what we can do.
What did it go for last year, 100?
Oh, golly, I can't remember. But, yeah, it was a huge price.
Right.
It really was. And that's good. And all of the county fairs have the same type of thing. They have their grand champion auctions. And it gives local people and local businesses an opportunity to show their support for the positive things that 4-H and FFA kids do.
And Governor Rauner will be there?
I would guess he will. It's called the Governor's Auction of Grand Champions.
Tradition.
So I would hope that he would be there. Yeah.
Yeah. So. By the way, Mike Madigan will be there as well, but I've got a better chance of interviewing the steer than I do of actually getting Madigan to come on here.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Great to see you, bud.
Always good to see you, and always good to check in with you.
Man, I appreciate it. That's the legend, Orion Samuelson. 9:55, sat down with Walter Jacobson a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about this 2016 election. Here's a piece of the podcast talking about how the media is covering this one.
Watching these bloggers. Who's watching the journalists? I think the bloggers don't even consider themselves journalists. They've just got something to say. And, you know, many of them are really quite articulate.
Sure.
And they have interesting points of view, but they haven't gone through the rigors of learning how to distinguish
Nope.
between what's accurate and what's inaccurate and where the source comes from and what he's saying. That's a real danger because, you know, more people listen or read
Sure.
what they're saying than what we're saying. And you know what? Part of the reason for that is that the media isn't sophisticated enough anymore to realize what's going on and lets itself get used by these guys. You know, I'm a cable television freak. I mean, every night I spend a couple of hours watching that television because
Sure.
once I start, it's hard to turn off. Trump is great entertainment. He's been using us. They're using us. They know exactly what's going to make, especially Trump, exactly what's going to make news, exactly what's going to get them on the air. And they foment the problems.
Never, ever, ever short of an opinion. The legend, Walter Jacobson. Again, that podcast available where all our podcasts currently live, including WGN Radio, the app, and WGNRadio.com. Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.